Dessa is a singer and songwriter, a rapper and a poet. Now, her reviews say things like, she combines the dry wit of Dorothy Parker and the beat of Mos Def, or if she isn't the future of hip-hop, she should be. Well, to achieve all this, Dessa travels constantly with Doomtree, who are her partners in performing. Now, the image of music stars on the road is pretty glamorous. Star chef suppers, special treats. But in the real world, how does an indie rap queen eat on the road? Well, Dessa is here in the studio. Dessa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. What a great introduction.
Thanks. Is food something that you really are into, or is it the fuel that keeps you going?
I think I'm into it. You know, I try to be mindful of daily calorie intake, just because so much of my life is spent kind of stowed in the back seat of a van. You're not moving very
much.
Right,
right.
But aside from that singular concern, man, I plan my days, I think, around my next meal.
You perform at night.
Yeah.
Which, you know, a couple hours on stage is like 12 hours of a work day. And then maybe you get some sleep, and then you're on the road heading to the next gig, right?
You know, it's funny. It's like, in one way, you could conceptualize your work day as like being 2 hours long, the time that you're on stage.
Right.
And in another way, you could consider your work day, you know, as maybe 19 or 20 hours long, because everything you're doing is in the service of performing, even if you're not actually on stage. So usually what'll happen is you wake up, you know, at the crack of 10 a.m.
Right.
And I'll look to my right, and I always share a hotel bed with the president of Doomtree Records. I'm the CEO. His name is Laserbeak. So I say, good morning, Laserbeak. And we go and we brush our teeth, and then everybody hightails it for the tour van, knowing that if we don't get on the road in a timely way, we're likely to miss soundcheck. So you travel for between 5 and 8 hours to your next gig. You get there, you scramble out of the van, you load all the gear in, you check your microphones. If there's time, you scramble away for dinner, and then before long, doors are open, it's time to perform. You do so. You're off stage, you sell t-shirts, you sign some CDs, you get out of the club by about 3 a.m., and you go to the hotel to do it all again.
And in the midst of all that, when do you get a chance to even eat? Never mind, what do you eat?
You know, there's a lot of, like, gas station stops. The food that doesn't come wrapped in foil is the exception, I think, on the road. And so, for me, and I do like eating fresh. You know, I really like produce. I'm a pescatarian, you know, so I don't do a lot of, like, gas station hot dogs.
Uh-huh.
And so, for me, there is like this distant mirage like oasis of like a sandwich or a salad that I am always thinking about on tour and trying with very limited success to create by, like, you know, collecting lettuce where I find it and getting ranch, you know, dressing that I saw at the last Amoco and stuffing it into the pockets of my jeans. And finally, the members in Doomtree were like, you know, you have maybe half a pound in single-serving condiments here. And you got to use some of these before you continue to collect them in the cup holders of the van or in your pocket.
Boy, does this sound like it's hard on your system.
You know, it is. And, like, I'm 31 years old, and, you know, most of the guys in the band started late teens or early 20s.
Right.
And it does, you know, it already feels
31-year-old, right?
It does feel different. It just, like, I don't know. I'd wake up on, you know, after sleeping on the floor, and I guess I wouldn't think too much about it. At 19, you just kind of pop up and
get
back in the van. And now now your joints are letting you know exactly where you've been and for how long. So,
What is, when you get a chance to sit down to, you know, a meal, what's joy for you on that plate?
Man, if I can find a sushi spot that stays open late enough for me to run to it after soundcheck and before doors, I am gone. You know, so I use the, like, phone apps like Yelp quite a bit to try to try to orient myself in cities that I've never visited.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll stop for gas. And I am waiting to take off like a sprinter, because I have seen on Yelp that there might be like a grocery store in one block. And, okay, if we need $103 worth of gas, like, I've got 4 minutes. So if the produce section is near the checkout line, I could get the dream salad. And it happens maybe once a tour, you know, that I'll sprint back to the van with, you know, with fresh produce under arm, and we're all kind of feast in the backseat. So.
Is there singer food? I mean, are there things that you would never eat before a performance? And are there things that you know help your voice?
I'll say yes, with the caveat that I think a lot of us don't have a really good empirical understanding of why we're doing what we're doing. It almost amounts to superstition. So I've heard that, like, Mariah Carey, you know, before she performs a big night, will always eat the potato chips that she's requested on her rider backstage. But I think that's because Mariah Carey likes potato chips. You know, Mariah Carey will say it's because, oh, you know, there's kind of a fat that's kind of lubricating the vocal cords, you know, to enable a long
performance. I tried that and nobody ever listened. But yeah.
That said, the kind of standard fare that you'll see vocalists trading backstage is, oh, does anybody have fresh cut lemons? If so, everyone will suck on them. Ginger, either kind of finely sliced and chewed on or just steeped in some hot water. Almost everybody uses honey. I was backstage two nights ago at First Avenue, and Brother Ali, from his coat pocket, kind of extracted like a little dropper full of herbal liquid. I'm still not exactly sure what it was, but you know, dosed myself right away, man. If it works for Brother Ali, you know, I'm using it. Everything is aimed towards lubricating the the vocal cords.
And so, and the stuff that's really bad for you?
Dairy. A lot of people don't eat dairy beforehand. Right. Half the singers I know think tea is a great idea, and half of them swear off of it. So the jury's out on hot tea. Yeah.
Does food ever figure into your music?
Oh, that's a first time. There's one lyric about wine and vinegar. Anger is just love left out and gone to vinegar. Yeah, so I guess it was based off the kind of metaphor of wine left too long undrunk. Yeah. And that always fascinated me, that there's this, you can kind of imagine a curve upward, sweeping upward like a hill and then falling off like a cliff with wine. That there was this moment when you uncorked it where you didn't know if it was going to have matured into something even better than you had imagined or be totally wasted garbage.
Yeah.
You know, and it felt to me like there was a relationship there with love and anger.
Where do the lyrics come from?
There's a few answers that I've given, but I think the maybe the most honest one is I'm not completely sure. I think sometimes it feels, as I grow older and you've had more bouts of inspiration and more dry spells, it feels more like kind of catching a wave than it does going to a well. So when you feel that a good lyric day is happening to you, it's like, okay, what can I get off my calendar today? Because I don't get these every day. You know?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like you're standing at the place that lightning struck last time, but it's still a game of odds and chance. And there's something that, if it's not mysterious, it's something that I don't understand completely. Sometimes I think it's a little bit of chemicals in my head. You know, there are sometimes when I feel like, this next 3 days, it's not going to be fun to be me, but I'm going to get some great content. And it's not because anything bad happened. It's just you felt like a barometric shift in your brain. I don't know. So a mood shift, I guess.
Yeah. But and you don't know where that comes from.
I don't. I mean, I've tried to figure out what could create the preconditions for that mood swing so that maybe I can go and do that all the time, whether that's staying up too late and drinking too much whiskey. Man, if I can get a great song out of that consistently, count me in, you know? I'll do the hangover. But I guess I haven't been able to find a single variable or a cluster of variables that's reliable enough to bring that on.
Maybe it's the right salad.
Maybe it's the salad. Maybe it's a pocket full of white mayonnaise.
I hate to think of what happens when you do
the laundry. Oh, the laundry is so bad. I know. Several Doomtree guys that like I'm an 8-year-old, you know, will like look in the pockets of my jeans before they agree to launder clothes with me. So,
how old were you when you started performing or singing?
Sure. I think the first time I did like a talent show at high school, I was probably 16 or something, but that was like a talent show. The first time when I tried to really pursue it vocationally, I was 21. I'd had a lousy breakup, was encouraged by a friend to get out of bed and go attend a slam, which is like a competitive poetry event. I did. Right. And she said, man, I think you could do this. And so I went and competed the next month.
Ha.
And unbeknownst to me, a lot of the local talent was out of town that day. And so I won that slam, thought I was, you know, hot stuff.
Right.
Totally inflated impression of my skill level, you know. By winning that particular evening, I was committed to an entire year of performance, which I hadn't known when I'd signed up. And so it was kind of an accidental stumble into performance that way. So
was rap a natural outgrowth of that, or was rap something? I guess I want to know why this form?
Yeah. I think part of what has kept me enwrapped in rap is the word count. That for someone who wanted to be a writer, having the ability to convey, 300 or 400 lyrics, words in a song, is a powerful medium. Whereas in a folk tune, just the words don't happen as fast. I mean, you'd have to have a 9-minute song, which would be very hard to make engaging,
right,
to tell a story. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Mm. And every word has to count, mm-hmm. carry incredible weight. And I mean, obviously in every song, but especially in rap.
And for me, it's always a balance. I don't think it's true for every rapper, because I think some people who have incredible percussive dexterity naturally are probably not so aware of the balance. But for me, there is always a balance between sonic value and content value. So I can make up a cool pattern of absolutely not, Gary Sinise's niece's knees are weak. That sounds kind of cool. It doesn't mean anything. Okay, so there's that one end of the extreme. And then on the other end is something, with some real significance. I don't want to imply that I think, that I've mastered lyricism, but I know what I want to say. Now I've got to figure out how to reconcile it with the form. I've got to figure out how this lands over snares and kick drums in a way that still feels presentable, not just in its meaning, but also in the, the musical and percussive value.
It's really fascinating. Dessa, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Lynn.